Welcome to Growing the Valley. I'm one of your hosts, Phoebe Gordon.
And I'm your other host, Luke Milliron.
Hi, folks. Before we start the show, just a quick note. As always, mention of a pesticide does not constitute a pesticide recommendation, merely a discussion of research findings. Always follow the pesticide label.
I sat down with farm advisor David Dahl shortly before he left the University of California this past fall. David was formerly a pomology farm advisor based in Merced County and is widely known for his Amendoctor blog. He kindly sat down for a number of conversations with Phoebe and I this past summer. In this conversation, David discusses disease management and almond production at Bloom. He starts the discussion with the disease triangle, a triangle of disease prerequisites comprised of a susceptible host, the pathogen, and favorable conditions.
What do these fungi really need to thrive? One, it's a susceptible host, which we have in almond. That's why we're battling these diseases. They're susceptible to them. If the tree wasn't susceptible, we wouldn't have a problem with it. And it's important to realize that at different times of the year, the susceptibility of the tree to specific diseases will change. Brown rot is a flower disease. It occurs at bloom. It's going to rot the flowers on the tree. Same thing with blast. Once we move past bloom, brown rot is not much of an issue unless we have infections in the tree that's continued to migrate into wood, which is more of a secondary aspect of that disease from our perspective. The second thing we need is the environment, and this is the environmental conditions. And generally with fungi, you hear me say this before in a couple of talks, leaf wetness is the fungi's best friend. It requires periods of leaf wetness in order for the spores to stick, germinate, and infect the leaf. If you don't have rain, you're not going to have infection. Now, there's some differences among these different fungi of how much leaf wetness they need. In particular, rust doesn't need a lot. And so that's why you can have relatively dry conditions and still end up with some rust infections on the tree. In contrast, if you don't have any rain during bloom, the risk of brown rot is very low, depending on moisture conditions from dew and other aspects. Then the last aspect is the fungal pathogen. That's the third side of the triangle. Monilinia, anthracnose, almond rust, or in Australia they call this prune rust. And it's not just the pathogen in itself. It's also what stage the spore is in. Is it sporulating? Is it producing active conidia that are then blowing onto another leaf? Are there any vectors present that are helping move that from place to place? The vector issue is not something we are too concerned with. In almonds, most of the times these things are just vectored by rain and wind splash rain onto the neighboring tree. That's kind of a quick overview of pathologies. We always tend to think of this as a disease triangle, and it's just a basis of epidemiology. And if we can control one side of that, if we can eliminate one side of that triangle, we'll never get disease. And that's not possible in an orchard system. What we tend to do is we try to shrink one side of that triangle one way or the other, either through natural conditions or artificial conditions, to reduce the amount of infection that's occurring and therefore get us to the end of the season without the negative impacts of a full-on infestation.
Dahl continues by introducing the big picture of how growers and pest control advisors approach bloom and weigh the need for sprays.
This is a very complicated decision, and it's based on where the orchard is located and essentially the immediate forecast associated with it. But if you spread this across the Central Valley, we're talking from Chico down to Bakersfield, the risk of rain is much different. You have, what, 20, 25 inches of rain in Chico? We have an average of 10 to 12 in Merced, and Bakersfield's maybe 5 to 6. So the risk of rain during bloom is going to vary greatly from north to south across the Central Valley. And I bring that up because you have to take into account different aspects of how many acres you have, how many times you think you'll need to spray the orchard, and your ability to get across that acreage in order to provide protection. And that's going to go into how soon you spray before an event, how the type of material you choose to apply to maybe get a little bit of a reach back potential or a little bit of of a potential control if you miss the optimal timing, as well as how frequently you spray.
Dahl describes the decision faced by growers and PCAs once rain is forecasted at bloom.
Looking at the forecast and trying to determine the spray is really the length or duration of the rain event, or leaf wetness is really what it gets down to. So if it's a multi-day event and you're in flowering, which is a sensitive stage, you're probably going to need to spray. If it's a passing shower and it's going to be sunny and windy afterwards, probably don't need to spray. Or maybe you'll reserve and spray a little bit later to time with another event very similarly. If you have days where there's multiple showers, that actually is just as bad as 2 days of constant rain. So those showers are constantly re-wetting the surface of the plant and allowing infections to occur. So that's essentially the three scenarios we cover, except for sunny and warm. Then with sunny and warm, I say you probably don't even need to spray. Some people don't feel comfortable with that, but I tend to change the timings on that in relationship to the other scenarios as explained.
David Dahl gets into what should be considered during the time crunch between getting a protective spray applied across a grower's acreage and forecasted rainfall.
With making a fungicide application, it depends, but generally speaking, unless the humidity is really high, it'll be weather ready in 30 to 60 minutes. So a half hour to an hour prior to a rain event, if you wrap up spraying, you're probably going to be okay. It's always best to have the spray on prior to the rain event. So fungicides work as a prophylactic. They actually cover the surface of the leaf and they protect that leaf from infection. So that fungicide is there, the spore lands on it, it germinates, and that chemical exposure to that germinating spore kills the fungal spore. So if you don't have that surface on there, what you are left with is trying to find a product that can move as more of a curative type product. And although we do have some minor curative products in the market, fungicides aren't curatives. They need to be applied, as I mentioned before, prior to the infection period to kill the fungus before it makes its way into the plant. And this has been the way we've been dealing with fungicides for the last 50 to 60 years, and they always tend to work best in this scenario. Now, there are products, and this is mostly some of these more modern chemistries, so a FRAC 3, a FRAC 11, FRAC 7, that have the ability to move slightly into the upper laminar layer of the leaf, so this is the upper surface of the leaf, and by doing that, it's able to actually kill the fungi as it's beginning its infection process. So within 1 to 2 days of infection, we can get a slight curative approach with these different fungicides. I think a lot of people tend to rely on that a little bit too much, but it is a strategy that could be used if you don't get all the way across your acreage and you can come back a day or two later once you have field access, you probably can get control of anything that's been infected. This idea of coming back a week later, it's just not the case. So it's something that has a very short window of operation. As you're trying to cover your acreage, it's important to make sure that you're getting across this ground when rain is forecasted. You'll get about 2 weeks of protection with a spray, 10 days of protection if it's heavy rain. And the other aspect of that is you have to take in the changing crop dynamic. So if you're spraying at full bloom, 10 days later you won't be in full bloom. You'll be at leaf out. And so those leaves are susceptible. So you tend to see a little bit of a moving target associated with the host or the almond tree as it's developing and pushing through these different stages. And to make matters worse, each of these different stages are susceptible to a wide variety of diseases. So we talked a lot about flowering. So we tend to think a lot about brown rot with flowering. Once we start getting into leaf out, we start thinking a lot about shot hole, anthracnose, the young fruit. When you get jacket split or shuck split, you're thinking of jacket rot. In bacterial spot, these tend to go on as these fruits are in a very sensitive stage and that rain tends to continue.
When deciding to spray and knowing that fungicides are generally protectants, the reach back on most fungicides either isn't there or it's limited. The temptation is often to spray every other row just to get across the acreage. What are the risks of doing that?
Think of it as essentially you're not getting a full dose on all parts of the tree that are being exposed to the spores flying through the air. So if you're going every other row, granted, we don't have the leaf surface to capture the particles, the spray particles that are being sprayed out. So we tend to get a little bit better movement through that open canopy than what we would if we had a full leaf out or any part of the leaf out. So the thought is, I can just spray every other row and I'll at least get some coverage. And there's some truth to that. I would say if that was the best you could do prior to a rain event, sure. But the downside of that is that you're applying lower concentration of that fungicide on the other side of the tree, which can increase the occurrence of resistance. And resistance is just a numbers game. It's not anything other than that. You have millions of spores, and eventually one of those spores is going to be resistant to the product you have. And the more you lower that dose that it's exposed to, the greater the odds of it finding a resistant population. And the way to think about it is it's no different than why we're expected to take our full course of antibiotics when we're at the doctor. It's to keep that concentration of the antibiotic high in our blood so we're killing even a population that might be mildly resistant to it, prevent it from populating and maybe becoming more resistant to it. This is the same reason why we rotate our fungicides. It's the same aspect, is we rotate to change that chemistry. And the way to think of it is we're spraying fungicide A, and we have one population in the orchard that survived fungicide A, and then we go through and spray fungicide A again. Well, that population is going to continue to spread. But if on that second spray, if we spray fungicide B, the odds of that population being resistant to both group A and B is very low. And that is kind of that same mechanism. It's about dosage, the concentration we apply to the surface, as well as the product choice and that product rotation associated to manage resistance. So that's a long way of getting into it, but ideally try not to spray every other row. Make sure we are able to time that application to get across the orchard at a very reasonable period prior to the rain. And if this means that you might have to cover part of your orchard with a second spray instead of a single spray, that's okay. I mean, it's better to have that than an outbreak of disease.
David also discussed two sometimes overlooked areas, both threshold for disease and the frequency that we see these diseases out in the orchard.
A lot of times when we talk about diseases, it's all about threshold. What can we stomach in seeing on our trees? I personally don't mind a little bit of spots on the leaves of a tree at the end of the season. What's it going to matter if we have a little bit of rust or a little bit of scab there, as long as we didn't have defoliation of that tree going into the fall? So that's my threshold. Some people will say, I don't want a single spot on my tree. Their threshold's much greater. So they're going to need to spray much more regularly than I would if I don't mind seeing a little bit of disease in late October. It probably does have no benefit other than increasing your spray budget, which I don't know if it's a benefit, to have clean trees at the end of the year. I think it's okay to have a little bit of disease, and the trees will get through it. One thing we don't really talk about is how frequently we see diseases in trees. And often it takes a while before we tend to see disease pop up. On a rare occasion, we'll have a devastating issue with brown rot or blast in the field, and it's very visible to us when we walk through. In other cases, it takes multiple years to build a high enough population for it to manifest itself into an epidemic. This past year, we had several orchards up in northern part of the county that had a lot of anthracnose, and it was widespread in these Butte Padre orchards. And time again, it wasn't for the point that the farmer wasn't spraying fungicides. They were spraying fungicides, but they were spraying them at the wrong timing. So there was this two-week period in March that occurred just about every year, March or April, that a fungicide wasn't sprayed. And we had a lot of rain. So you had the rain, the long period of time, the changing leaf surface area of the plant, and we were getting a long period of susceptibility to infection. And so even though you're spraying, it doesn't mean you're providing protection for your plant. And that's the flip end of this, is we apply this material at a sensitive time to provide protection, and it needs to be made within the persistence of that product. And that's where that every 10 to 14 days kind of timing would come in rainy conditions. Now, that would suggest that we need to spray these orchards 5 times to get us into May without having some level of infection. And as we all know, that's not the case. And again, this goes back to weather. So if we're coming into full bloom and it's sunny out and it's predicted to be sunny and there's not a lot of dew, probably don't need to spray. This is particularly true with resistant varieties to brown rot like Nonpareil. Now, if we're planting a sensitive variety, we probably might want to do a full bloom spray, and that would be like Butte Padre. Butte's very sensitive to brown rot. So with the Nonpareil orchard, sunny and we see rain, or maybe we're a little bit nervous, we can move that spray into the petal fall period, which then allows us to target more diseases than just brown rot. So in that case, we're looking at anthracnose, shot hole, brown rot, jacket rot, and we can provide control for a larger group of pathogens with a single spray. And that's just by simply waiting 5 to 6 days through the progression of bloom. If no rain's coming, still, to me, I think a petal fall spray is normally warranted because you just can't predict the weather at that period. But nonetheless, if weather is clear, you could even wait probably 2 weeks or another week after petal fall to make that application. And at some point, if you have enough guts, you could probably even get away not making a application. But my general thought is probably settling in on that petal fall period to provide control for those 4 major pathogens of anthracnose, shot hole, jacket rot, and brown rot. And I really think the jacket rot and anthracnose have become emerged as probably the victors of those bloom time diseases. And that's simply probably just to do with their ability to infect for a longer period of time in that post-petal fall period.
When choosing what material to spray with, it's important to not only think about the efficacy of the material, but the timing as well. And UC researchers Jim Adiskavich at UC Riverside, Thamis Michaelides at Kearney Ag Center, and others published what we call the Fungicide Bible, the fungicide efficacy and timing tables. But one of the important things is really to be looking not only at how good a chemistry is, and there's a lot of good chemistries, but rotating through those frac groups like you were talking about.
Yeah, so I could sit on here and I can list through 5 different types of fungicides, and you know, I maybe take notes or tune me out. Who knows? It is a podcast, so probably tune me out. But the reality is that's what that document's there for. Every time going into bloom, I review that. And I look at the different modes of actions. I look at what modes of actions are effective on what. And I look at what it would take to maybe even make different types of combination products that would provide control of the different diseases I want. I mentioned before about how anthracnose and jacket rot are kind of becoming a little bit more prevalent in the area because of misspray timings. Not because they're not spraying, but missed timings. With jacket rot, it's often poor chemistry selection. So jacket rot is a combination of 3 different fungi that essentially affect this dead material that's forming around the tree. It's just the jacket. It's where the petals connect and stamen connect and stuff like that. It's just this dead material. And you see Sclerotinia, Botrytis, Monolinia, all these can infect that dead material. And then these fungi, if conditions are conducive, they hop over to the green nut, and they cause the nut to drop or they cause it to be deformed. And this group of 3 pathogens, you never know which one's it going to be. And often we want to spray a strobilurin, which is a frac 11, or a DMI, which is a frac 3. So this is very commonly, these are like bumper tilts, a frac 3, a gem and a bounds, a frac 11. Those 2 groups don't do a very good job of controlling jacket rot. And so we often get misses showing up every year because people are saying, I want to spray bumper because it's cheap and I'm spraying it at petal fall. Well, that's not a very effective product. And so often we have to look at putting in or using another mode of action that provides control. And that's where these tables provide support. You don't need to remember these numbers we're having on this podcast. You need to go and download the chart and say, I have an issue or I want to control for anthracnose and jacket rot. What time do I need to have? Because they have little timing tables. What products are providing me good to excellent control? And what are the options for rotations? All that's provided in this document. And it's updated regularly. And there's fungicides that aren't on it that are on previous editions that are effective. So just because the fungicide's not on there doesn't mean it hasn't been tested or it's not effective. It's just it wasn't tested that year. And that's where using a little bit of that logic of looking at that FRAC number, which means Fungicide Resistance Action Committee, it's a number to help make this a little easier for everybody, and looking at other products that are on that list with that same number and comparing it for control. And of course, the caveats, all of them are a little bit different, but generally speaking, a 3 is going to perform as similar to another product that's a 3. You know, one thing we didn't cover was the additives at Bloom. So I catch a lot of flack for this in many occasions, but surfactants often aren't needed to add to fungicides. Unless the label specifically calls for it, fungicides generally have surfactants that are already used in the mix. And unless there's a reason you're doing it, I would avoid surfactants, mainly because we're finding, especially with organosilicon surfactants, that they may decrease hive health. And so putting this stuff out when we have bees out, so we have another organism that's doing some of the pollination work for us, we have to be a little bit cognizant of what that may, the secondary impact of that product being. My general thought is I would avoid probably the use of surfactants adding to fungicides during bloom. As we move out of bloom and we have more leaf area to cover and we need more spreading on that leaf surface, it probably changes a little bit at that point. But again, keep that in mind that most fungicides already have surfactants. I would say most and nearly all fungicides have surfactants added to them.
Thank you so much, David.
You're welcome, Lou.
This has been Growing the Valley, a UC ANR podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Phoebe Gordon.
And I'm your other host, Luke Milliron. You can learn more at growingthevalleypodcast.com.
I would like to thank my sister, Muriel Gordon, for kindly providing the theme music to this podcast.